on the field, inside the clubhouse, and everything in between. This is Brewers Weekly. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Well, here we are again. I've finally dusted off the microphone, and we're sitting down to record a Brewers Weekly podcast. Hi, everybody. I'm Dominic Catronio. Might be a while since you've heard my voice, if you were listening during the wild card round. Thanks to everybody who listened and reached out and had kind words to say, even the ones who didn't have kind words to say, because that was a stinging loss, man. That really, really hurt. And we are going to have a little bit of group therapy here. We're going to sit down. I've got some notes I want to talk about from the actual game itself. Listening back to that final post-game show, it was all about the fans and the season, that sort of thing. I want to talk a little bit about the game if we can. We all know how it ended, obviously. I think we're far enough away from being able to talk about that, you know, 3 weeks post-mortem. Furthermore, I want to talk a little bit about the news this week from the Brewers camp that they have reassigned their hitting coaches and how they're going to outline that heading into the 2025 season, which is a sentence that is still wild to say out loud, to say the least. I also want to talk a little bit about, hey, offseason is going to be here before you know it with the World Series being set. It's not over yet, obviously. It starts on Friday. But the offseason officially begins 5 days after the World Series ends. And we'll talk more about this as that day arrives, but let's just give you the quick little fodder of what to be expecting in those 5 days coming up after the World Series ends. And then finally, we will talk a little bit about the World Series here at the end of the show. And I know there are mixed feelings about big market World Series. I am not one of those people. I have very direct, stern, positive feelings, which shouldn't come to surprises you, about this year's World Series. Before we talk about the wild card round and, you know, what happened in that game, real quick, you know, just kind of peel back the curtain here. The reason why there hasn't been a show the last few weeks is because, well, I've been running around with TBS over on the American League side. For those of you who don't know, I am Brian Anderson's statistician, his researcher, his stats guy for the playoffs. And that happens regardless if the Brewers are in it or if they're out of it, if we're doing the American League or the National League. And the last couple of weeks, we were in Detroit and Cleveland for the ALDS. Those were some awesome environments. And then, of course, for the ALCS, we had the Guardians and the Yankees. And I can't say enough great things about working with BA, about working with the team that we have at TBS, with Ron Darling, with Jeff Francoeur, with Lauren Jabara, who joined our team this year as the dugout reporter. Just glowing things to say about all of them. I hope they like the work. Maybe you heard my fingerprints, if you will, if there is such a thing of being able to hear fingerprints in the broadcast and the rapport that I have with BA is something I never take for granted. And being able to, you know, sit there and, quite frankly, again, pulling back the curtain, I get paid to watch baseball, and that is a dream job, to say the least. So these last couple of weeks have been super fun watching baseball, and now I'm going to be watching, like the rest of you, the World Series, just sitting on my couch, getting ready to go into the off season. With all that being said, let's start talking about the Brewers again, and let's rip off that Band-Aid now, shall we? Let's talk about Game 3 of the Wild Card Round. What I do during a game, I'm obviously keeping score, and I have notes in my book, and you know I keep every pitch, and I keep things locked in, but sometimes there are things that slip through the cracks, and I keep a separate notebook for that. And I think what I'm going to do in the 2025 season is I want to crack the curtain a little bit on that sort of notebook, and I might actually take, you know, fingers to typewriter, if you will, and actually put this out in the 2025 season throughout the games, and maybe not a daily game log, but certainly a weekly game log, where these thoughts, I think, really bring home, because sometimes we don't get to everything in a post-game show, and especially we didn't in the final game of the season, given that game, you know, now that we're 3 weeks away, I know it ended horribly from the perspective of Brewers fans. I was texting with a friend who is a newish Brewer fan. He's not from here, but he's learned to love the Brewers as this has been his hometown for quite a long time now. And he's never really been a massive baseball guy, but he's learning to love it again. And he got to go to all three games. And I was talking to him about this. Game one obviously stunk. Game two with Churio hitting two homers and the Mitchell go-ahead home run. I'm like, dude, you just witnessed an all-time Brewers classic. He's like, yeah, man, that was energy. That was amazing. That was awesome. Then game three, and for 25 outs of it, he was seeing back-to-back Brewers all-time classics. But then it flipped into, oh, you just watched an all-time classic wild card game. You know, regardless of the team, you know, obviously it's going to live in Mets lore and it's going to live in Brewers infamy, but that was a game that you're going to remember for a long time. And man, I've seen some great, great games this postseason talking about it, you know, doing the TBS side with Brian Anderson, right? So we were there for the Kerry Carpenter home run off of Emmanuel Clase. We were there for David Fry, former Brewer prospect, David Fry's pinch hit go-ahead home run off Bo Brisky in Detroit, Lane Thomas's grand slam in Cleveland, the rally against Class A by Judge in Stanton in game two, in game three, and then for Fry to turn around in the big Christmas home. I mean, we've seen some crazy stuff this postseason, so I hope that kind of gives you solace of like, okay, it turns out Devin was just the first closer to go down this October, because you look at it, Emmanuel Clase, who was the most invincible closer in Major League Baseball, went down multiple times in this postseason, once against the Tigers and twice against the Yankees. And then furthermore, you look at what the Phillies went through against the Mets with Strom and Hoffman and Iglesias, rather Carlos Estevez, you know, who they acquired from the Angels at the deadline. They all blew a game. You look at, you know, Edwin Diaz was running on fumes at the end of the ALCS. And you look at over in the American League side as well, Luke Weaver gave one up. Clay Holmes gave one up. So we all know how it ended, obviously. I'm really not going to talk about how it ended, but I've got some bullets here of maybe things that we forgot happened in that epic game three, aside from the obvious. Okay, we know Alonso hit a homer. We know Sal Frelick hit a homer, going back-to-back with Jake Bowers in the first ever pinch-hit home run in Brewers postseason history from Jake Bowers, of all people, right? So that's the obvious stuff. I want to talk about the less obvious stuff, and if your memory is like mine, this would be easy for you, but maybe you'll digest some of these bullet points, and then when you're ready to watch the game again, you'll see what I'm seeing here. One of the first bullet points I want to talk about is Tobias Myers. And Tobias, we knew the plan all along. We've been saying this all September, not only for Tobias, but for Freddie or for whomever starter it was going to be in that wild card round. They were going to get two times through the order. That was it. That was the plan. That's what they were going to do all along. And the indication to me in that first inning, Tobias Myers got four swings and misses in the first inning alone. 1-2-3, no problem. Energy was in the building. It was epic. And it was a thought of, or I shouldn't say 1-2-3, one base runner after the missed tag from Bryce Terang. But nonetheless, it didn't hurt because he got a couple of strikeouts in the frame. That showed me, okay, first inning had always been Tobias Myers' issue, right? All regular season. I mean, the first pitch of his big league career, that kind of set him on the path that it became for the rest of the 2024 season. The fact that he got through the first inning with four whiffs, leaving a man stranded after a misplay by Bryce Terang, which is super rare, I thought, okay, wait a minute. You know, normally he settles in from here. The fact that he's already settled in, will he be the guy that's allowed to face more than five innings, more than two times through the order? So we remain to be seen on that. And then not only that, did he follow it up with 10 pitches, all strikes in the second inning. That's when I was sitting there with my jaw agape, sitting next to Greg Matzik, who was covering the game with me for WTMJ, and we're looking at each other like, whoa, okay. I mean, the Brewers hadn't been able to channel that yet to this point in the first two games of this series. Frankie pitched well, but not like that dominant sense. And we all know how it went with Freddie in game one. So those are the first couple of things that jumped out to me about Tobias Myers, and then he even got a 1-2-3 fourth inning on only eight pitches. So there are a couple of things at play, in my opinion. I think the Mets knew they had to be aggressive against Tobias Myers and get him out of the game sooner as opposed to later, and make Pat Murphy go to his bullpen sooner than he wants to, knowing what was coming out of the bullpen, giving everybody was going to be available. And once he got through the fifth inning, it was like, all right, time for the Brewers to roll out all the relievers that they knew that were going to be coming. More on those guys in a moment. On the offensive side in the first five innings for the crew, Willie Adames finally got the first stolen base for the Brewers. Remember, we talked about it plenty in the preview show on the Monday before the wildcard round. The Brewers had to keep running wild on the Mets. They hadn't been caught in the regular season against New York, and yet it took them until game three to have a successful stolen base in this series. Now, part of that is because they were trailing, and you don't want to risk base runners when you're down, because every base runner is precious when you get to that point in October. But at the same time, the fact that Willie, in Game 3, you know, he put together a great year, 30 homers, 20 stolen bases. That's a first for him. Maybe he can do a 30-30 year at some point in his career. But the fact that he was the first guy in the third game was an indicator. It's like, all right, the Brewers got out of their game plan, or you tip your cap to the Mets for getting ahead early and neutralizing what's a massive part of the Brewers' success during the regular season. Another thing that I wanted to note was Blake Perkins in the bottom of the fifth inning. It didn't amount to anything, obviously, because the Brewers didn't score in the bottom of the fifth. But Blake Perkins continues to give great ABs. And there have been times I've kind of wondered, like, man, I don't know if he should be batting second, you know, especially when they're facing a lefty like they were in this game with Jose Quintana. I'm like, man, why is he batting left? Why is he batting second? And why isn't Terang hitting higher in the order just because there's a lefty on the mound? And we all know how Terang's postseason went despite facing plenty of left-handers. Perkins made me eat my lunch right there. And I just want to put my hand up right off the bat. Like, man, he delivered some great ABs during this postseason. He's not your stereotypical two-hitter or your stereotypical six-hitter. But a 9-pitch battle in the fifth obviously didn't come out of anything, but I thought Perkins had quietly a very good postseason. Now we get into the later stages of this game, and I'm not going to go for too much longer in this segment of the podcast, just because, again, it's not like I'm hiding anything from you. But the sixth inning, when Trevor Megill came out, and I was just wondering aloud, like, man, if there's anybody that was going to be allowed to face a third time through the order, I thought it would not have been Tobias. However, with the way that he was rolling and the way that his pitch count was under control and the way that they kind of coddled him down the stretch and that sort of thing, I kept wondering, I'm like, man, maybe I should have sent him back out there. Then I realized I was falling back into the, you know, the fallacy that is the gambler's fallacy. Oh, he's got the hot hand. Oh, he's going to get this. He's no big deal. Yeah, he's going to keep rolling. Third time through against Alonso and against Lindor and Nimmo and Vientos. There were some great players in there that were going to make it hurt on Tobias. So I understand. And again, do you want to be the guy that has to answer to the fact that, oh yeah, I didn't have my best reliever in, my next best reliever that wasn't Devin Williams in the game when I knew it was the third time through the order? I totally understood it. But Trevor Megill, I mean, I know the Unsung Hero Award already came out for the Brewers, and it was Jared Koenig. Rightly so. Like, absolutely. I didn't vote on these. I'm not a member of the Milwaukee chapter of the Baseball Writers Association. But Trevor Megill, man, I don't know if there's an award for it. I don't know if there's just a gold star. But looking back on his year, and quite frankly, to get real for a second, if the Brewers trade Devin Williams this offseason, and you sit there looking at Trevor Megill as one of your options at the back end of the bullpen, you're like, man, he learned a lot this year. He grew a lot this year. And you can get really excited about what he's capable of. And the way that he dominated that sixth inning, fired up the crowd, got everybody involved, he was not afraid of the moment. And you talk to new closers, I mean, what, he blew one or two saves in the regular season? I don't remember the number right in front of me, but you wonder about a new closer and when they face a little bit of adversity, how's it going to be for him? And he had the back issue, he had the comebacker, he had things that a little bit, that speed bumps, if you will. But nonetheless, he was not afraid of the moment in October, and I think that is something that the Brewers have stowed away to think about if they do trade Devin this offseason, and we'll talk about that later on here on the show, but I was so impressed with Trevor Megill in the two games that he got to pitch in and how he attacked hitters. Here's my big heavy fastball. I dare you to hit it. He found command of the curveball once again. He looked fantastic. Another guy that looked fantastic coming out of the bullpen that, man, I'm not going to lie, I was holding my breath on, was Nick Mears. That was until Frelick and Bowers went yard, which was in the bottom half of the seventh inning. I mean, that was epic. Like, that was epic. Nick Mears, who has been through some adversity this year too, and the tipping pitches controversy with the Colorado Rockies, how he was unhappy that no one was able to catch it, or the fact that he had the elbow or the elbow forearm irritation that he kind of kept to himself because he was finally on a competing team, right? I had conversations with Nick about this where he's just like, man, it's been bugging me for a while. I thought it was a little bit of fatigue, but then, you know, it gets to a point where you're not being effective. You're giving up homers on balls you shouldn't be giving up homers on. It's because you're not throwing at 100%. And you're never really 100% in the second half of the season, but for him to go to the Brewers and say, hey, look, I need a breather. I need to get this right because I want to get big outs for you in October. And he got some massive outs for the Brewers in game one and, of course, in game three, nearly popping a blood vessel as he was fired up getting the strikeout in the seventh inning. Again, if you've been listening to the pod, you know how long I've been a fan of Nick Mears and how we all called it together, you know, asking who could be under the radar trade targets for the Brewers heading into the 2024 deadline. I said Nick Mears. I didn't think anybody was going to believe me. Matt Arnold made me look smart, so I appreciate you, Matt. That was a massive moment. Then, of course, the home runs. And then I have an X in my notes here because we all know how this one ended. Nonetheless, I also want to touch real briefly. I did see the John Boy tipping pitches video. Was Devin tipping his changeup? Was he tipping fastball? Was he tipping changeup? It would indicate the fact that there wasn't much swing and miss against Devin in that inning. And even in the last couple of weeks for him while he was returning, wasn't getting the same swing and miss. But I also want to make something very, 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 very clear. Suggesting that, he was tipping his pitches. Oh, whatever. Anybody can hit when you're tipping your pitches. It's not that easy. Furthermore, I think, in part, it takes a little bit of credit away from Pete Alonso. You may be thinking, like, oh, wow. I mean, if he was able to spot that tell and hit the ball the other way knowing a changeup was coming, yeah, that's cool and all. But when you watch that at-bat back, he was sitting changeup. That was his whole game plan. And I know I actually was the one who asked Devin the question, like, hey, your fastball's been fantastic this year. Why do you think you're throwing it more, you've used it as an out pitch more often? He's like, well, look, if guys want to sit on my changeup, be my guest. I've got this fastball in my back pocket too. The problem is he didn't have fastball command. And when you fall behind against a hitter like Pete Alonso, who's already got a game plan that says, I want to hit your best pitch, I am going to hunt your best pitch, you couple that with the fact that he hung the changeup, regardless if he was tipping the pitch or not. That was the worst changeup he threw all year, quite frankly. And Alonso is an elite opposite field low ball hitter. Boom. That's the rest of history. So, yes, I saw the video. John Boy does a good job. I mean, you can see it. I'm not going to dispute the fact that he found a tell, and Jimmy's really good at finding those sort of things. But at the same time, I don't want to take any credit away from what Pete Alonso's at-bat was and what the hitter's game plan was and how he was able to get the job done. And let's also be real, too. I mean, there were two outs away, obviously, were the Brewers, but, I mean, you're not going to win many postseason games only scoring two runs, and that's been the story all year for the Brewers. Okay, I'm going to clap here in a second, and when I clap, that's going to be the time that we imagine we put Game 3 in a box, and when I clap, we close the lid, and we let it gather dust on our bookshelf of memories, and then we will move on and start looking forward to 2025, okay? 3, 2, 1, boom. That's it. We're done. On to 2025. With that being said, let's talk about the move and the announcement from the Brewers that they're making some new changes in the coaching staff. And for those of you asking, what does this mean for Chris Hook? We don't know yet. There has not been confirmation that all of the coaches are coming back. Now, that's the plan. There are guys that are up for renewal, up for new contracts. That's a little, you know, shady, if you will. I don't want to say shady, but rather not clear, not publicly available. So we will wait with bated breath if Chris Hook's coming back, Jim Henderson's coming back, if Walker McKinvin's coming back, that sort of thing. However, we did get some news on the hitting front. And it is that Ozzie Timmons will not return to the team as a hitting coach. He is a coaching free agent. After 3 years with the team, he was hired ahead of the 2022 season. With Connor Dawson, who is being reassigned into a leadership role within the hitting staff, as they will also add another hitting coach in Eric Tyson. He doesn't directly replace Ozzie Timmons, of course. Eric Tyson has been in the minor league system as a hitting coordinator for the Brewers for the last few years in their farm system. For those who don't know, every team has roving instructors in the minor leagues. There's a hitting coordinator, there's probably an outfield defense coordinator, there's an infield coordinator, and so on and so forth. There are specialized roles for coaching that they go, you know, affiliate to affiliate and make sure they're learning the way that the Brewers want them to learn and what their emphases are, I don't know how to pluralize that, on for their development, you know. So Eric Tyson has seen these guys growing up in the organization, the Churios, the Blacks, the Freelichs, the Mitchells, and that sort of thing, bouncing around from affiliate to affiliate. So he's not an outsider coming in. He will be reporting to Connor Dawson. Furthermore, they have also hired a longtime Brewers coaching favorite, AAA hitting coach Al LaBeouf. And Buffy, as he's affectionately known, is sort of kind of like a hitting whisperer. There's the mix and the sort of multiple schools of thought in hitting these days. I mean, you go to any youth travel baseball tournament, you'll see half the kids trying to swing like Aaron Judge, even though they're 4 foot nothing and 100 and nothing, because, oh, well, this hitting guru told me I need to drop the barrel and hook. And then there's these other hitting coaches that are just like, yeah, man, see ball, hit ball. What's so hard about that? I mean, I'm not, that's oversimplifying it, but you get what I'm trying to say here. There are multiple schools of thought to it. And Buffy leans more into the, hey, man, let's be a little bit of a psychologist here. And quite frankly, Vinny Rotino told me this too. He's just like, look, hitting coaches in the big leagues, they're really psychologists. I mean, they're you're not going to like completely revamp a hitter's mechanics in the big leagues, right? They've got to the big leagues for a reason. You're there to be a shoulder, to be a, you know, a pair of eyes, to be whatever they're working on, if they want to feed them some drills, that sort of thing. And I'm not trying to, you know, desensitize or maybe even devalue the value of a hitting coach, because trust me, they have a very difficult job, and they become scapegoats for some fan bases whenever the hitting staff isn't going well, like what the Phillies did this past offseason. But nonetheless, when you look at it, when you have contrasting styles and when you have multiple schools of thought at play, it's not going to hurt you. And I don't want this to think of it as like clashing, like, oh, Al LaBeouf's going to come in here and tell Eric and Connor what to do, and that they're doing too much analytics, or the Tragic system, which is the simulator, you know, the pitch simulator system that the Brewers have that can literally say, hey, I'm facing Gerrit Cole today, and you pull up his repertoire, and then you're watching a monitor of Gerrit Cole throwing his pitches. I mean, there are multiple ways to learn how to hit. Nonetheless, the Brewers now technically have three hitting coaches, but Al LaBeouf is going to report to Pat Murphy, and then Eric Tyson is going to report to Connor Dawson. Connor Dawson reports this to Al LaBeouf, and they all work together, obviously, to say the least. But I'm excited to meet Eric. I have not met Eric before. I have met Buffy for the last few years here on the beat whenever he comes up to visit. Also, Buffy was in town when the Brewers clinched the Central, and that was a really cool party to have him on site for. He had a health scare a few years ago. Adam McAlvey wrote a great piece on Buffy and on Eric on their hirings here for the 2025 season. Find it on MLB.com as to what to expect from those guys. So can't wait to meet them in spring training, maybe sooner, and see what we can learn from the Brewers hitting side of things. But also want to take a moment to say thanks to Ozzie Timmons. He was great to me. I always had something for him every day, and he knows that if for some reason he is listening right now. Ozzie was great to me, honestly. And he was out there every day, early work with Willie, with Jackson, with William. And he was the guy feeding the machine or giving them front tosses, doing whatever they needed to do to get their early work in, like we talked about with Churio, learning what it takes to be a big leaguer and go through his routine to be in the show and be successful in the show. Ozzy was a big part of that. And a great anecdote from the end of season pressers and everything like that was from Kurt Hogue of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel telling a story from Ozzie Timmons about in June, right at the beginning when Churio was about to snap and get back into, oh my gosh, this guy's going to be incredible, was Jackson pulled Ozzie into the batting cage and said, I just need to hit the frustration out. I just need to get it out. And Ozzie threw to him, and he hit, and the next day he hit a home run. So Ozzie's contributions are certainly valuable, and I think he'll be missed personally. I really enjoyed talking to him, but there's always a reason for all things. We may not know the full story, but I wish Ozzie nothing but the best moving forward. I really, really, really did learn a lot talking hitting. I love talking hitting, if you can't get it, because the reason why I love talking hitting is because I never figured out how to hit, right? I was just a slap, oppo, fake toy cannon. I realized far too late my power was to center field and to right field. And I kept trying to pull the ball, and then I'd hit a ground ball to short every single time. But every time I'd get a breaking ball, I'd hit it to right center field. And for some reason, I didn't think that was cool. So if Ozzie Timmons was my hitting coach, he would have fixed that for me. But nonetheless, I wish him nothing but the best. And we will have a new hitting coach tree, if you will, for the 2025 season. We will react to Chris Hook news, to Jim Henderson news, to all of that when the day comes. But we don't know when that day will be, nor is that information public yet. So that's the hitting coach side of things. Let's talk a little bit about the offseason, then we'll wrap things up with the World Series. Again, options and free agents to come. All of that officially begins in the quote-unquote league year. The league year of 2025 begins 5 days after the World Series. And in that window from the end of the World Series to that fifth day, free agents like Willy Adames and Joe Ross, those are the only two unrestricted free agents the Brewers have, that the Brewers can put out an offer to them before they formally hit free agency. Now, if they do hit free agency, then obviously they can listen to all bidders at that point. Also, in those 5 days, you have to decide if you're going to opt in or opt out. That's both for the team and for the player. So the player option, Rhys Hoskins, the one that we're all monitoring, he's due $18 million if he opts in. Quite frankly, I think we all understand we would be shocked if he does not opt in. So we're expecting Rhys Hoskins to return for the 2025 season. Furthermore, there are some obvious club options that the Brewers have, like Freddy Peralta. He'd be due $8 million for next season. Another one that I think they're going to opt in on is Colin Ray. He's got a $5.5 million deal on the table, a one-year deal for next year. Otherwise, it's a million-dollar buyout. This is a club option. Again, the Brewers have control. I'd be shocked if they don't bring Colin Ray back. Another sneaky one that you may have forgotten about, and I reported on this briefly at the very end of the season, but I want to double back on it. Eric Haas has a club option. This is not technically arbitration. They signed him to a 1+1 deal with an option for this year. And quite frankly, I'm picking up that option. I'm keeping Eric Haas because Jefferson Caro, who we know is going to be the top prospect catching-wise in the Brewers organization, is coming off of shoulder surgery. He is healthy, but he's going to start playing in spring training. He's going to need some more time in the minor leagues. And if he makes his big league debut here in 2025, that'll be cool. But he has been hurt quite a bit, and you need insurance in the backup catcher spot, which means I think Gary Sanchez is walking, given he has a mutual deal. Mutual deals almost never get picked up. Another guy that has a mutual deal is Frankie Montas. That's a $20 million deal. The Brewers are not paying Frankie Montas $20 million, so he will go into free agency most likely. Wade Miley also has a mutual deal with a buyout, so Wade's not going to pick that up because he did the same thing last year, then ultimately returned. Wade's got to go through Tommy John rehab. If he wants to return, that's a big if. You know, does he want to return? Does he want to keep pitching? Does he want to return hopefully by All-Star break, August time next year, if he's going to be in this rotation for the Brewers and maybe see if he can get one more dance out of it? Who knows, but that's something that you might see a headline for Wade Miley. And then you also have the Devin Williams club option. Now, they're going to pick that up because it's only a $250,000 buyout, and that makes him an unrestricted free agent, and then the Brewers get nothing out of it. So they're going to pick up that $10.5 million club option, which they signed him to last year at arbitration time to avoid an arbitration battle with Devin Williams this year, which I think was a smart call on all parties. And then ultimately, they could still trade Devin Williams, you know, a sign and trade, if you will, where you pick up the club option and then trade him at some point this offseason. I remind you, the reliever market always moves slowly, especially in the offseason. However, I feel like a guy of Devin Williams' caliber, it's a one-year deal. It's sort of a thing where maybe teams will be hesitant, like, am I really going to give you prospect capital for 1 year of Devin Williams? The right team will do it, and I know the Brewers will be always listening, as they always are, but nonetheless, you're going to hear rumors plenty about Devin Williams on the hot stove in November and into the winter meetings in December. And it's more about the fact of it's not because he's making too much money, because $10.5 million for an elite all-star level closer is certainly doable, but it's more about the fact that the Brewers want to make sure they get something out of him heading into his free agent year in 2026. If they decide to keep Devin Williams, he's probably going to stay the whole year unless the Brewers severely underperform in 2025, because the reliever market once again moves very slowly, but especially so at the trade deadline. And given what the Brewers have learned after the Josh Hader trade, trading a pillar in the middle of the year is not easy. Nonetheless, we'll see what happens. I could sit here, eat my words, and Devin Williams spends the whole year with the Brewers, or maybe they sign an extension for him. I don't know. But nonetheless, that's going to be something, a major topic of this offseason. And of course, the other major topic is the guy I mentioned at the top of this segment, Willy Adames. Willy Adames is a free agent. Willy Adames is going to get paid. I don't think he's going to get paid by the Brewers. And I think you know that. And I think I know that. Nonetheless, we've been shocked before. We'll be shocked again. I will react to that day whenever that day comes. And it leads me into World Series talk because I know inevitably, if it is the Dodgers, like we've all been speculating for quite a while here, it will sting a little harder because of the money and Shohei and Yamamoto and Freddie and Mookie. It's just like, really? They got to get him too? Like, it's just, we'll talk about that day when it comes, if it is the Dodgers or whomever it may be. One team that I just refuse to think that is not going to at least kick the tires on, especially if a certain player isn't able to be re-signed, and that's the New York Yankees. I could really see the Yankees. I know they love Anthony Volpe, and they got to re-sign Gleyber Torres too, in my opinion. But if they don't get Juan Soto, they've certainly got some money earmarked to spend elsewhere on a guy like Willie Adames. And maybe, just maybe, they go to Willie and say, hey, Willie, you've been a great shortstop. We really do think you're good. But how do you like third base? Now, this is way out there, but I think one day Willie Adames is going to be a third baseman. I really do think so. And I had a scout tell me as such earlier this year, and I never really thought about it. And the reasons that he gave me were pretty valid reasons, and I could see that. But maybe not immediately, which is why that would maybe eliminate him from Yankees contention in 2025. Nonetheless, we'll react to that day when it does come. But I know you're prepared for it. It's going to suck the day that it happens. I think Willie Adames has played his final game in a Brewers uniform. With all that being said, let's lead into the World Series talk. And I'm going to be really real for a second here. All the people that want to say, oh, I'm not watching this World Series because it's big market, this big market, big money teams, the little guy never has a chance, all this stuff. Stop it. Just stop it. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong because I think that's mean. But what I'm going to tell you is, regardless if it's big market, small market, whatever it is, some of y'all were complaining last year about Rangers and Diamondbacks. Oh, two small markets that nobody cares about. Why do we care? What do you want? Seriously, what do you want? Like this is the way life works. There's a winner and a loser. And also, in this World Series, one of these Mega Millions teams is going to lose the World Series. It is not a guarantee. And I know Brewers fans would give tooth and limb and nail and every phrase and idiom under the book to say, I want to go to the World Series. I get that. I totally get that. But to sit here and say you're not going to watch the World Series because it's two big market teams and stop it. In 25 years, when your grandkids or, you know, someone is around that maybe is 10 years old and is just starting to get into baseball, and Aaron Judge is going into the Hall of Fame, and Juan Soto is going into the Hall of Fame, and you know, Freddie Freeman's going into the Hall of Fame, Mookie Betts, all these guys, and they're like, man, wow, Grandpa Dom, like, did I see the Dodgers and the Yankees played each other in the 2024 World Series? What was that like? Because I know it feels like, oh, this is going to happen every year. You don't know that. Why do you know that? Because injuries happen at any given moment. Teams can underperform, undervalue, things can change in the blink of an eye. And the fact that we get to see, maybe, I'd say arguably six of the best 25 players in the game right now in the World Series, including the top four, right? Number one, Shohei. Number two, Judge. Number three, Soto. Number four, Betts. Like, oh, by the way, a hampered Freddie Freeman. You get to see Gerrit Cole, who's one of those top six as well. I'd even argue that you can throw in Yoshinobu Yamamoto when healthy as one of the best players in baseball. So I'm excited to watch this World Series. I really am. Because think about, like, I know there was some Bucks pain in here, though, too. Think about those Cavs-Warriors NBA Finals years, right? I mean, obviously different salaries, right? But you were seeing the best versus the best. LeBron James at the peak of his powers against Steph Curry and the Splash Brothers at the peak of their powers, right? You saw LeBron beat them, then the Dubs go get Kevin Durant. We all know how that ended, but nonetheless, maybe the Warriors are the Dodgers in this scenario, right? And the Yankees and Aaron Judge is LeBron James. And that's a half-baked idea, but you get what I'm trying to say here is that we love when the best play the best. And you cannot doubt for a second that this is the best versus the best. There is nothing fluky about this. Both of these teams made it through the bye round. Only one team that had the bye got bounced in the DS, and that was the Philadelphia Phillies, who were yelling at the Braves for complaining about the bye for back-to-back years. Oh, look what happens. The Phillies get beat by the bye. They try to make excuses. Nope, that's not right. Three out of the four teams moved on. They beat the bye, okay? Oh, the Yankees had an easy road. They didn't have to face the Astros. The Astros weren't good enough. The Astros had Josh Hader on the mound against Andy Ibanez, and he hit a double down the line. Okay, they weren't good enough. Oh, well, the Dodgers, they got all this money, and they got all this pitching, and they're able to defer money to Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, I get that. But at the same time, they haven't won a World Series since 1988. That Kirk Gibson home run you see over and over and over again, that's the last time they won the World Series. The Yankees, obviously, since 2009, they haven't even been to the World Series since 2009. So, finally, two major market, big money teams have made it into the World Series to face each other head to head. Do you realize how rare this is for both of these teams? I know the Dodgers won it in 2020, and I should backtrack and say they won in 2020. The last time they won a full season World Series was 1988, because I've made it very clear how I feel about the 2020 season. I think it's going to age poorly. I really do. I will recognize the Dodgers won in 2020, but I think it does have to have an asterisk saying, hey, it was a 60-game season. Nonetheless, the Dodgers have a chance to have their first World Series since 1988, since Kirk Gibson off of Dennis Eckersley and Oral Hershiser's an epic season, or the Yankees have a chance for some of their stars to finally get their first taste of the World Series. And you're not really a Yankee great until you win a World Series. And that is going to be the scarlet letter that Aaron Judge has to wear in his career until he wins a World Series as a Yankee. So for these two teams, getting there isn't enough. And I want to be respectful and honest. Brewers fans know getting there, to an extent, is enough to some people in this Brewers fan space. And I'm not trying to tell you it is or isn't enough. There are some people that feel that way. Just getting there and winning the pennant is enough. That's fine. For these two teams, just getting there is not enough. And that's why I'm fired up to watch both of these teams get a chance to win a World Series. We get to watch Shohei Ohtani and Aaron Judge, both in their primes, both having MVP seasons in the World Series. That does not happen often. So I think we should all sit back and enjoy it. Of course, we'd rather the Brewers to be in there, yes. But nonetheless, this is going to be a World Series I think we're going to talk about for a very, very long time. As I go to wrap here, I do want to say real quick, you know, you may have seen the news late Tuesday night. Fernando Valenzuela passed away tragically at the age of 63. Dodger legend, Mexican baseball legend. I'm half Mexican. I grew up in Arizona. Sonora, which is where he's from. Sonora is the state in Mexico that borders Arizona. And I tell you what, Fernando Mania is everywhere still to this day in Arizona and, of course, in Los Angeles. Seeing the tributes that come out for Valenzuela there on Dodger Stadium's marquee, I think, is beautiful. There are plenty of great videos and resources to find about Fernando Mania there in 1981. Of course, he was on that team that faced the Dodgers and Yankees in the World Series, the last time these two teams met in the World Series in 81. So just educate yourself for a minute, being 20 years old and having the world in Southern California in the palm of your hand as a young Mexican-American in the USA. Man, what a beautiful, beautiful career story, legendary El Toro. I mean, we lost him far too soon. In fact, a real quick anecdote is that my grandfather, my Tata Bo, as I called him, grew up loving Fernando Valenzuela and loving the Dodgers. He's from Sonora, Mexico, and he came across, learned English by flipping between Jaime Jarrín, the Spanish radio broadcaster of the Dodgers, and Vin Scully sitting in his Cadillac in Tucson, Arizona, right? That's how he learned English, flipping between Jaime Jarrín and Vin Scully. How cool is that? Listening to Fernando Mania with his young daughters running around the house. That's my mom's dad. And just so cool to think about that my Tata Bo is in line to meet Fernando up in heaven right now. So I think that's so cool. We lost him far too soon. I shook Fernando's hand once in the Dodger Stadium press box with Jaime Jarrín, and I just quickly told them that anecdote, and I know you guys have heard it all the time, and they couldn't have been more gracious. So we'll miss you, Fernando, and I think of the Dodger family. I'm sure there will be a beautiful tribute for Fernando before Friday's game one. With all that being said, thank you for listening. You know, we have dusted off the microphone. We're back to talk some Brewers baseball this offseason. We'll have more World Series games to react to this time next week. I don't know the next time we'll be live because we have a Bucks conflict next Thursday, which is why we're recording this one. The Bucks play next Thursday night on Halloween as well. We'll probably have another tape version there too here in the podcast feeds. And then we'll be back live in November on WTMJ. That's going to do it for this episode of Brewers Weekly, episode one of the off season. Let's sit back and enjoy the World Series. My name is Dominic Catronio. Keep on swinging.